Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
It's the Disruption Zone. My co-host and co-executive producer back in the house, Cameron Mills. What up, dude? How are you?
I love that I'm a co-executive producer and I'm never on the show.
Well, yes, you are. You're on the show regularly. Just not, let's say the time.
Once a month.
Mm-hmm.
Once a month.
It's all up to you, though. You could be on every episode if you want.
Well, I know that. I know. And no, that wasn't a complaint. I just, first of all, I love being called an executive producer. That is what you want in your winner in Hollywood. Mm. That's the power play, right?
Yeah, it's the money
that's
man.
That's what you want. Listen, I had friends who started a podcast called Chasing Scratch, which is all about, which was a brilliant concept.
I love this. Yeah.
Okay, it's about two friends, two very good friends who are in their 40s, like early 40s. They've got children, they've got wives, and they're trying, and they love golf, and they're trying to pursue scratch handicap in golf, which, you know, is what the pros have and what a lot of, you know, Division I college golfers have. I mean, it is hard to get there. You got to be really good. They're chasing scratch, but the point of the podcast is how they do it, their process, while, and this is key, maintaining being good fathers and good husbands, right? Yeah. Not neglecting their family and doing this. And it's hysterical because both of them are very funny. But I listened to the first episode and I thought, this is so good. Like, they were just starting. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it and I thought, this is one of the best. I mean, the production quality was high. And this is one of the best podcasts. And it's so hysterical. And it might be hysterical because I know these two idiots. But I think it's just funny in general. So I called them both. And this was right when my documentaries were coming out. So I was proudly wearing the title of executive producer. And then I had my own podcast and radio show going on. So, you know, I had a bunch going on. And so I called them and I said, guys, I will grant you access to all that is me, if I can just have the title of executive producer. I won't do anything. I don't want any control. I don't want any power. I will not tell you what you should do because I think you all have hit on a gold mine here. I just want, when you all go through the credits at the end, because they do, they mention all of the credits at the end, I just want to hear my name, Cameron Mills, executive producer. That's all I want. And you guys have been friends of mine for years, and I feel like you owe this to me. And they wouldn't do it. They kept because they didn't know how I was being silly, but I was very serious when I approached them about it, and they didn't know how to take me, even though they should have. So they kept putting it, well, we'll talk about it. And so I just kept digging deeper, like, okay, how about this? I'll give you this. Bottom line is, Titleist is now like a sponsor of their show.
That's crazy.
And I'm just thrilled that I saw the genius before anyone else.
Yeah, I love it.
And so even though I never got the title of executive producer of that show, I just thought, well, at least I saw what was going to be good.
Well, now you have it, and it's your also-ran. So
yes.
You have it of this podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we wanted to talk about great gratitude, and
yes,
we'll get to that in just a minute because – it's a big buzzword that's going on in corporate circles, and it's a big buzzword that's going on sort of just in society today, and not just corporate circles, not even just Christian circles, but also secular circles. Yeah. So I want to break that down in a bit. But I got to ask, I'm going to put a link to this on the podcast page so people can see what we're talking about here. But have you seen this Yahoo News story about the internet going wild over these inflatable latex trousers? It's a fashion show at the London College of Fashion, and there's some fashion graduate named Hari Krishnan, not to be confused with Hari Krishna.
I find it hard to believe that's their actual name, but yeah, go ahead.
we'll just let them go with that's their radio name. And they have these inflatable latex pants that, when you saw them, what was your first reaction? Come on.
I will tell you, my first reaction was, these are testicles.
Yes.
These are testicle pants.
Someone said,
like to be cruder, but, you know, our show, I want to maintain the G rating on our show.
Yeah.
But these are, I cannot look at these and not see, you know how someone.
Actually, I would say these are elephantitis testicle pants because there's none that
that's
size.
Fair. That's fair. Maybe that's the purpose of these pants, to give those poor people afflicted with that horrible disease. Now, I don't mean elephantitis because, you know, some people, you know, there are diseases where your testicles inflate massively.
Well,
you know,
these pants
there's
are
a retention of fluid.
Right.
And that's what these. But see, here's the thing. knowing the fashion industry the way I do, which is from afar, this is just the fashion industry. They're not concerned about people afflicted with, you know, over-enlarged testicles. They're just stupid.
When I saw the picture, I thought, hey, look, finally a pair of pants for guys with really big calves.
Yeah. Oh, big calves. But the problem is, I can see how that might be.
Isn't this the ultimate in man spreading, though? Like, if you sit down and you got room for that.
Well, let's be honest here. This is, you'll notice in the pictures of these things. And do they have a name? I know they say inflatable latex trousers, but has the creator or the stylist called these something special?
They have called them I don't think they have a name for them.
Well, there's a missed opportunity there.
Yeah.
They need to call them something. Have a little double entendre in the name, something like that.
Yeah, the romper was a terrible fashion thing for men, exactly. But at least they gave it a name.
Well, look, this isn't even fashion, Leland. I mean, let's talk about this seriously for a moment. This is no human being is ever going to wear this nonsense.
No,
I mean, no human being. Nobody's. These are never going to go on sale. These are the most ridiculous. These look like a costume design for the Lion King the musical. That's what these look like. They're from something like that.
But actually, they look like look like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Yeah, that's
Oompa
Loompas
in there.
Yep, that's almost wow. That's a great call. That is what they. But the problem is when you look at them immediately, I'm sorry. The first thing you see is you see a 12-year-old kid who is getting bored in the back of his what would that be, fourth or fifth grade class?
Right.
He's sitting in the back of his fourth or fifth grade class, or maybe that would be seventh or eighth grade. He's sitting in the back. He's bored. And so he draws airplanes or he draws cars. That's what I did. And then some of them who have an older brother, you know, who has probably talked hypersexually around them, they draw testicles and large penises. That's what they do. And when you see these, when you see these pants, that's the first thing you see. These pants have been designed by a 12-year-old as a joke. And some fashion designer thought, boy, that would really make a wonderful statement about our society in 2020.
Well, okay, so here's what the fashion designer said. Hari Krishnan Deason said that the inspiration behind his collection was that I got the idea when I was playing with my dog and I started thinking about how exaggerated objects must look from such a low angle.
Okay.
See, I was thinking, do you remember when Nike came out with the pump shoes? Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, I had a pair.
This would be like the disaster that would have happened if those had come out at the exact same time that MC Hammer pants were fashionable. And then if you had tied them around the laces around the ankles and then pumped your shoes up, you would have had these pants.
Yes. Yeah. Actually, you may be – here's the problem with that theory is that the pump – and I don't think it was Nike. I think it was Reebok that had it.
Reebok did it. No, Nike did it after the Reebok. You're right.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. Reebok was first, and then Nike came out with one afterwards.
Tell you, there is some wisdom in those pump shoes because if the whole point of your shoes is to fit like a firm pair of feet, like, you know, just some feet with some protection, but they're to snug your feet, right?
Right.
Just snug, then the pump makes sense. But I think the pump shoes came out at the same time as the MC Hammer pants. I think they were around the same time.
We're gonna have to look that up. We'll have to Google that because I gotta. Okay. But anyway, these pants are hilarious. I've got a link to it. You can see them on our podcast page, thedisruptionzone.com.
But people need to check it out because if you've heard us talk about them, and I promise you, there is no exaggeration in anything Leland and I are saying.
Well, it could be.
You're gonna go.
You know how those Regnet dudes with the big old trucks, they like to hang those testicles from their trailer hitch?
Which, by the way, the first time I saw that, I wanted a pair of those.
Yeah.
My truck. Okay, and then about 5 minutes later, I thought, oh, no, you're not that person.
What does your girlfriend say about it when she sees the guy with that truck? She goes, somebody's overcompensating for something, right?
Somebody's overcompensating, right? Well, yeah, exactly.
Millennial and younger Z men have no testosterone, and they've become these sort of pasty, skinny jeans wearing mild-mannered beta males. Maybe this is the fashion design industry trying to rescue men and get back to manhood, but they're overcompensating.
If that's what they're trying to do, this is not the solution.
Okay.
If the problem you just because I honestly only understood. Maybe
well, I said overcompensating. I said no, overcompensating.
But that's the thing is that this is not how we solve that problem. I think that if we're talking fashion, couple of years ago, I think it was, when there were the design fashion amongst the highfalutin, right?
The
people who would live on the, not the cutting edge of fashion, but the bleeding edge of fashion, right? Those people came out with and started wearing these suits with capri pants, right?
Oh, yes.
Those, and then I said, I remember when, and this was right when the NBA had made a mandate that you had to, as a player, you had to show up to games in suits. And so all the NBA players were showing up in suits. And then you saw some of them showing up in very classic, great looking three-four button vested suits. Look, I mean, they just looked good. And then you had some fools dressing up in this, like, you know, cutting edge of fashion capri pant suits that just look, and even the people like calling the game, you know, like the Charles Barkley's and everything, would look at these things and think, what is he thinking?
Right.
And you would have to think back and see the same thing. And anybody who would wear these testicle pants would have, you'd have to think the same thing. You'd have to go back and say, dude, what is your mind? When you put these on, first of all, before you, my question is, Leland, do you inflate them before you put them on or after?
It says there's a valve at the ankle. So I think you put them on and then you inflate them.
But that, wait a minute, by that definition, you would have to pick up your ankle, bring it to your mouth.
There would be a funny sound coming from the room, and you would say, no, I'm just inflating my pants.
Yes. Well, and so then I have another question, a follow-up question then. Do you inflate them with, is there a pump, does a pump, like a little battery
it
or electric?
It says there's a valve. Yeah, it says there's a valve at the bottom. Let's see here. Okay, the trousers, which could be like an exaggerated version of harem pants, have a divided opinion. Most refreshing statement of an idea in quite some time. Thanks for creating and sharing. One fan of the trousers wrote, "These are gorgeous."
Refreshing.
I'm just reading what the people wrote.
No, I know, but I'm mocking what these people are writing.
Yeah, these are gorgeous, and the work that went into making all these different forms is so impressive.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Let's see. Somebody said manspreading is going to be a nightmare.
The work that went into them, I have no doubt, is impressive. Because basically what someone has done is they've taken a beach ball and they've just added it to a pair of pants. Two beach balls. That's what they've done.
Seven millimeter wide inflation valve at the bottom.
Yeah.
I'm wondering how the trousers get there. Perfectly proportioned
inflation.
But that
doesn't answer my question. Does a pump come with it, or are you blowing these up with your mouth?
I would say there would have to be a pump, because once you get them inflated to a certain point, you can't see your feet anymore.
I will tell you this. Okay.
So you wouldn't physically be able to do it.
Unless you inflate them before you put them on. But I will say this, after you and I have mocked these fans relentlessly, deservingly so. If these are to be inflated with a mouth, right? With a human, no pump. There's no pump that fits this valve. It is one of those like beach ball mouth, you know, you have the way you blow up a beach ball or blow up an inflatable pool raft. If that's how you inflate these, I will never wear them. I will never buy them, but I am in full support of them if that's how you inflate them.
Well,
I will completely redirect and change my attitude. I will tweet this out and I will say these are the greatest, maybe the greatest pair of slacks ever invented if you have to inflate them with your mouth.
You wouldn't want to wear these playing dodgeball.
You wouldn't want to wear these ever.
Well, we have a link to this on our blog page. It's thedisruptionzone.com. You can check out the
this is Leland,
inflatable pants.
This is one of those things where, and I know I've talked to you about him before, but I love listening to Adam Carolla. Adam Carolla is one of my favorite podcasts. Mm-hmm. It is my daily podcast. Is the Adam Carolla show?
Yeah, it's good stuff.
He says this all the time, and I love it. I think it's so true. And this is not, I'm not discounting. You know, there are issues in our country, in our world, that need to be solved. And there are things that, you know, need to be fixed. But we are scraping the barrel when it comes to problems anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, if you compare it to what things used to be, I mean, you compare it to how people used to live. You know, when the average length of life was like 35 years old, you go back to the dark ages. You come today and we're getting so soft.
Right.
Because life is so easy. I do not have to go out and worry and hunt a deer this afternoon
to
make sure my family or I'm going to eat. I have to go across the street, okay? And not only that, Lena, I don't even have to go across the street. I can have Grubhub. Bring me my food.
Yep.
You no longer have to leave your house. We are running out of problems to solve.
Yep.
And this is the result. You've got designers who could be out there designing very practical pants, right? For things. And at one point we did. We had the cargo pants, which were the most practical of all.
Most tactical of all. No. People say they're out of style now, and I can't handle that. I'm still going to wear my cargo pants.
Well, you are a hiker. I am what I would call a casual hiker.
Yeah.
Yes, casual hiker. And I am still, if my work would slow down, if and we'll talk about that when we get into gratitude, but if my work would slow down, I would be hiking more. I'd be in better hiking shape so I could keep up with you and Tabitha. But if I was, cargo pants are the pants for hiking.
Yes.
I mean, they are. They really are. That's when they're best
hiking,
used.
Hunting.
Yes, anything where you need extra pockets. But yeah, we used to wear them as they were part of style. They were, you know, yep. You had your cargo shorts. And I will tell you, I wore cargo shorts long after they were out of style.
Yeah, me too.
But I didn't realize they were out of style.
Yeah, well, I found out last year, but I still wear them because they're practical.
Oh, okay.
To your point.
See, well, but the point, but Leland, when you're married, when
yeah,
you got
it doesn't matter.
When you're married with a successful marriage, right? As
yes.
You and Tabitha have. You, this is why dads become dads, you know, meaning like, you know, well, he's wearing dad pants or yep. Wearing mom pants. You don't have to impress anyone with your style anymore. You don't have to look
that's
cool.
Right.
Therefore, you continue to wear cargo pants and cargo shorts long after
that's
style.
Right.
Well, and that's the problem you're facing
to
right
your
now
point,
in your life.
To your point about running out of problems, this is a great segue into our topic today, which is gratitude. I think in order to talk about gratitude, though, we have to lay down a little bit of a definition, because I think what's interesting is, to me, gratitude has become a buzzword, and I have friends that are not believers. They're not Christians,
yeah.
And they are using this buzzword, and I was talking to one of them the other day, and he was talking about gratitude, and he says, you know, I want to have gratitude in my life because it makes me, you know, more successful, and you know, I need to
what?
Stop and think about these gratitude things. And I said, what? Hold on, let me finish, because this is very important. This is an important key. Let me get through this, because this is very important.
All right.
And I said, who are you grateful to?
Yeah.
And he said, the universe. And I said, do you mean God? And he goes, no, I don't really believe in God. But the universe will bring you good things if you put out good things. So if you put out good vibes,
Lord.
The universe will. And I said, well, how is that not God?
In some sense.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm trying to get to that point, because I was like, how does the universe have a sense of will and you know, an ability to send you good things if it doesn't have its own mind and therefore isn't in control? And he said, it's all the people, it's like the collective mind of humankind. And I was
right.
Like, what are you talking about? If you don't believe in God, then when
right.
People die, they're gone. They don't exist anymore. There is no collective hive of all mankind in the past. There's no one guiding
yeah.
You if there is no God. So I want to bring it back around to this. Gratitude to me is a very key aspect of how we ought to conduct our lives.
Uh-huh.
But I think before we can have this conversation right, don't we have to know who we're grateful to?
Well, yeah, because it's interesting what he said. You pointed out the second part that I noticed, which, and you mentioned that. To me, that what bothered me about your friend's statement is, I need to show more gratitude because it makes me successful. No. That's reverse thinking. You are successful, therefore you need to show gratitude for
right.
Those who helped you be successful.
Right.
That's the point of this. And it's interesting that you said gratitude is a buzzword, because I didn't know that. I really, even though I am definitely involved in the corporate world, with my Monday through Friday job, I didn't know that was a new corporate buzzword.
I'm thankful.
It's
a whole gratitude buzzword thing where people are doing gratitude journals and all that. It's a big deal.
I like that. I like that. But the point to me, here's the thing. It's one thing, and let's back up and let people know where this came from with you and I, because this came from a text that I sent a couple weeks ago to someone, and I'll tell the whole story. But I woke up one morning, and I've had some very, very wonderful things happen in my life the last few years, right? I've had, you know, I've got my radio show, which is growing. I've got my ministry, which I've had for 21 years, and you know, it's not slowing down. I spoke twice this weekend. You know, I've got, you know, look, we all go through ups and downs in life, and I went through some downs. I will go through more downs in my life, but this particular morning a few weeks ago, I woke up, and for whatever reason, I truly felt this great sense of gratitude. And, you know, one of the things I got in the habit of doing, and I was telling someone the other day, interesting enough, that I've gotten out of this habit. But one of the things I got in the habit of doing, and this goes back to your friends, or your point regarding your friend, is, you know, you and I think it would be fair to say, if when we are given something, whether we feel we deserve it or don't, because in my mind, that's the word blessing. And blessing to me is a very overused word. I think sometimes insincerely, but a lot of times I think it's sincerely overused. But I think it's overused in the sense that, you know, I think sometimes it's used in the sense of when you're basically, you get on Twitter and you want to tell someone, you want to tell your Twitter followers about something big that's happened to you, right? Right. You basically want to brag. You want to do a humble bragging. That's the word.
Humble bragging.
And so the way you get around that by not looking like you're bragging is you hashtag blessed, right? Just won something or won some big award. Hashtag blessed. And that's why I think it's overused. But you and I would look at it as though, okay, we're thankful to not, it wouldn't be our universe, to your friend it would be the universe, but to us it would be God, which is what you're driving at, is who are we thankful to?
Right.
And I used to be in the habit of when something would happen, and this is where I try to stay, and I don't always do it, sometimes I'm terrible at it, but for humility's sake, I try to keep my mind on the truth of I truly deserve nothing. I don't deserve even the things I work for. Look, I worked hard as a high school basketball player. I did not deserve to be a basketball player at the University of Kentucky. I was given that opportunity by basically what some people would call a cosmic flow of luck, right? My dad was a former player. My dad knew the current equipment manager in 1994, Bill Keitley. So my dad went to talk to Bill Keitley. Bill Keitley talked to Billy, I'm blanking on his name, what was the coach that he coached at Florida, now he coaches
Billy Donovan.
Thank you, good gosh, Cameron, it's early in the morning for me, actually it's earlier for you, so I can't use that as an excuse. Billy Donovan went to coach Patino. This all happened in a day, and the point was my dad was going there to find out if Cameron has a great senior year, you know, is there any chance Kentucky's going to be interested in signing him? And so that was I was very fortunate to have that line of succession happen. And basically it got to Coach Patino, and Coach Patino said, no, we're not going to be recruiting Cameron. He could have the greatest senior year ever, and we're not going to be interested. However, he said, if Cameron would like to walk on, we will happily have Cameron as a walk on. Now, look, that doesn't happen. That opportunity doesn't happen to a lot of people. But there were a lot of things that had to fall in place for me to even be able to have a quote unquote audience with Coach Patino to allow me to walk on.
Right.
Or who could say I could walk on. So I didn't deserve that opportunity. So when I look at that, yes, there are certain people in that line of succession, my dad, Mr. Keitley, Billy Donovan, Coach Patino, who I am very grateful for, but I look at that and say, that's a God thing.
Right.
That's just a God thing. Right. And so the thing I try to keep my mind on is, I tried it when I see those little things happen, and they can be little, they can be small little moments where I'm having some anxiety over something and something comes along in my life and relieves that anxiety, that I want to out loud verbally say, thank you, God. And it's not enough to think it. I have to say it. And I used to be in a very good habit of doing that every time I noticed something, because what it taught me was, yeah, Cameron, you can work hard, and yeah, you can, but working hard is no guarantee of anything other than you will have, in some sense, dignity, because that's what hard work brings you. It doesn't necessarily bring you money, though it could. It doesn't necessarily bring you power, though it could. It brings you dignity. And I think that's one of the things that's lost on a lot of people today is, you know, working hard, you may not make a fortune. But when you get up and you go to work and you bust your tail on a construction site, or you bust your tail, as a garbage collector, you know, some of these jobs that there's very little gratitude for, and there's very little or very much of kind of shoving your nose at these people who do these quote unquote menial jobs. Those people that do those jobs with a smile on their face and work their tail off, it brings them dignity.
Well, let me interject here just a little bit, because I think we're kind of confusing. You know, there's people with skills that if they don't know the right people, they may never achieve the most that they could achieve with those skills. That's a true statement.
Right.
There's people who have minimal skills, but because they know the right people, they get in places that they don't actually deserve to be or aren't capable of being because of who they know.
True.
And in that sense, you know, all of what you say is correct. I disagree somewhat that hard work by itself can't bring prosperity. Yes, you have to have a level of intelligence and an ability to see around corners a little bit from a business perspective, but I will guarantee you that not only do you get dignity, but people who work hard in life, and by working hard, that's not just I'm going to go out here and I'm going to throw up as many fence posts as I can, but it's people who work hard at making sure their customers are happy, that work hard at all aspects of the job. In other words, that dignity that they have, they will be prosperous because people will turn to them for when those jobs are needed to be done. So as a person who doesn't have as much talent as a lot of people in my business have, I can attest to the fact that being willing to do more and work harder and longer has led to more success than perhaps I deserve based on my skill set.
I get that. Well, I think so. We have to come down to another definition then, because how are you defining prosperity? Because prosperity can mean two different things to different people. And that may be what's going on with you and I right now, because to me, what I'm saying is, yes, you can have prosperity can be having a sustained career in a certain line of field. That can certainly be prosperity. But does that mean you're going to get rich? And that's what I mean by you can work your tail off and not ever get rich.
Yeah. I don't think prosperity is wrapped up in money. I think prosperity is.
Yeah. Then you and I don't disagree at all.
Okay.
We're on the same thing.
Yeah. Because prosperity is respect. This person is respected for their skill set and what they do.
Absolutely.
We look to them for their expertise.
Right.
Their opportunities that will open up for them as a result of their expertise. They're trusted, exactly, and respected. That to me is prosperity. And money is side.
Money. But I think that's the point. And that was the point I was trying to make, is that's why I focused on the word dignity. You're focusing on the word prosperity, but I think we're saying the exact same thing.
Okay, cool.
The point is it's not, it may not be financial richness, right?
Right.
It's bringing, and this sounds so weird, but it's bringing a richness of life, not necessarily a richness of finances.
Right.
And look, we do live in a day and age, and I think life has always been this way, where, you know, everyone's after the things that, look, it's not that money doesn't matter. It's that there are things that can matter more. And happiness in life is not derivative on based on what your paycheck is. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so back to a couple weeks ago, I woke up and I just woke up and I felt a tremendous amount of gratitude towards a person, because your point to me is very important, is that to feel gratitude is important, but into, you know, to have that attitude of being thankful, awesome, not just on Thanksgiving Day, right? Because isn't that what we do on Thanksgiving Day? At least I do. I get up and I'll send texts to the people I'm thankful for, but I try to be specific. And that's what I felt like a couple weeks ago. So what I did is I got up and there was a very specific person I felt a lot of gratitude for because of a couple of things that have happened in my life recently. And that person was Rick Pitino. And I've already kind of alluded to part of the reason I felt a lot of gratitude for him. But I just thought, you know what? I've not talked to Coach P in a few weeks, actually, in a few years, and I'm looking at things that have happened in my life, and I thought, you know what, I can see specific things that he taught me, right? I know of specific things that he taught me. I thought I knew how to work hard in high school. I had no idea what working hard meant until I met him, okay? I thought I had great character in some areas, and believe it or not, I know some people would laugh at this based on some things that he's gone through in years. I will tell you, he taught me great character and things. And so I just thought, I'm going to text him. And so he of course is in Greece, he's coaching that Greece basketball team. And I just thought, he's not heard from me in a while. I need to reach out to this man, because a lot of the things I have in my life, I owe to him. And I don't just mean the gift he gave me to be a Wildcat, because he did give me that gift. I included that in my text, but there were things like, you know, you taught me how to not be afraid to fail. So I think of the documentaries I've done recently, and I think, man, that was just a shot in the dark out of the blue, something I've never done before, never, you know, never had any desire to really do, except, you know, until recently when I thought, well, wait a minute, this is a story that needs to be told. So I thanked him for teaching me that. I thanked him for teaching me about the precious present, which was a common thing he would do. Every Christmas, he would read us a book called The Precious Present. And to the listeners out there, I would highly advise you not only to get a copy of the book, The Precious Present, it's not a long book, but get a copy of this book and read it to your kids. Read it to yourself and then read it to your kids, because it's basically all about staying in the present, learning from your past, but not living in your past, not dwelling on the future, stay in the moment, right?
Right.
And it was a big deal that he taught us for when he coached us. It was hard to be coached by him, right? It was difficult.
Right.
So we can't live in the past and be, you know, mindful of, oh, he yelled at me. He hates me. He doesn't like me. I'll never have a chance to play. That's a recipe for failure if you stay there. If you look at what he said, learn from what he said, and then move on with your life in that moment, that's living in the precious present.
Right.
And then the last thing was being coachable. That was the other thing that I thought. And I think what's interesting is my gratitude towards him was not in things that he gave me as much as in things he taught me. And to me, that was the important lesson personally for me, is I got up and I was very grateful for things that I have. But then I had to think back, why do I have certain things? Well, there are particular specific people, okay, who I had in my life who loved me enough even to say some harsh words to me, but loved me enough to make sure I learned lessons. And I had to that day, I was overcome with this attitude of, I can't just feel this gratitude. And to me, I wonder if that's the buzzword, if that's the problem, not that there's a problem with this buzzword, but if gratitude is a buzzword, then it has to go beyond being a buzzword. And being thankful is important.
Right.
But showing and sharing gratefulness and thankfulness to the people who you are thankful for, to me, that's the icing on the cake. Living a life of gratitude is important, but let's go beyond that. And let's reach out to those people through text, through phone calls, through letters, through emails, through anything, through face-to-face conversation, buying them a cup of coffee and saying, hey, can I talk to you? And not even telling them that why you want to talk to them, sitting them down to say, I just wanted 15 minutes with you to thank you for the difference you played in my life.
Right.
That's what I think we're missing a lot of. And I miss that too. That's why it kind of stood out in my mind a couple weeks ago. And I thought, man, you know, I've not told this person who I owe a great deal to how thankful I am in a couple years.
Right.
When we had the reunions, I told him, but I hadn't told him in a while. I thought, I need to reach out to him and tell him.
I see your point, and I agree with pretty much everything that you just said there. I think in terms of the whole buzzword aspect of it, that's kind of what I'm getting at, is like, how are you specifically grateful, and what are you specifically grateful for? You know, it's a human emotion. Gratefulness is a human emotion. It's actually one that it's centered and based around the emotion of desire, right? It's like, it's sort of,
okay.
It's like a part of that emotion unfolding. You desire something, you receive something, then you're grateful for having received what you desired. You know, it's like a line, a chain of events.
I see what you're saying.
And so I like what you're saying about, you know, finding those people in your life, because I think you can think about success maybe slightly differently too than just going back to your point earlier about hard work. Sometimes it just, you get dignity and maybe that sort of prosperity, but there's a level beyond that. And there was a statistic I heard one time that really kind of have over the last several years has changed the way I approach my professional life. And that is that the five people closest to you will determine 95% of what happens in your life. Now, I'm a strong believer in personal destiny. I'm a strong believer in free will. I'm a strong believer in sort of creating your own destiny.
Sure.
I'm a strong believer that as Christians, we lay that down to God and let him implant that in our lives. But in terms of as human beings, I'm a strong believer in that. But I also believe that we can do certain things and establish certain relationships that do what you're talking about. They propel us to our full potential. You were a great basketball player who might have otherwise, I don't want to say languished in the NAIA because you would have dominated it. But you were destined for so much more. And because you had the right people around you, you were able to achieve that destiny, so to speak. So I think part of this whole gratitude equation is to seek out and find people where you have these relationships where you can provide something for them to be grateful for, and they provide you something to be grateful for. Does that make sense? You're looking and seeking out.
No, it does.
Surrounding yourself with people who are positive, who are uplifting, who are propelling you forward as opposed to dragging you back. We've all had those friends that have no gratitude about anything, and everything is attack, and everything is negative, and everything is a victim situation. You got to digest those people out of your life and replace them with people who are looking for things to be grateful for.
Well, I agree with that. I think the only turn I would make on that statement is that most of us, well, here's the thing. When I go back and I think about my relationship with Coach Pitino, I was not gracious and grateful. Grateful would be the word. I was not grateful in the moment for him yelling and cussing me up and down. And I not only would not have sought that out in my immaturity, I would have avoided it and tried to desperately my freshman year when I went home with tears in my eyes because of things he had said to me in anger, and cried to my mom and dad and begged them to let me quit. And what I was doing is I was begging them to let me quit a relationship, yes, with University of Kentucky basketball, okay, a dream I'd always had. But what I really wanted to avoid was him. I wanted to avoid him. And thankfully, because my parents were mature and they were adults, and they saw the wisdom in, you know, having someone that will push you, drive you, correct you, rebuke you even. And I think that's where you're everything you're saying, I agree with, that you want to seek out those people that are going to be positive, but you still need to be thankful for those people. And maybe the gratitude doesn't come till later, but you need to be thankful for those. Maybe their intentions were ulterior. Maybe they wanted to hurt your feelings. Okay. Right. Maybe they did. Right. And I'm not saying I would ever find one of those people who I learned a valuable lesson from because of their cruelty. Right. But you can still learn things from what people say in their cruelty and in their ulterior motives. I probably wouldn't seek any of them out and say, hey, I want to sit down and have a cup of coffee with you because you were such a maniac in my life and you ruined my life in so many ways. But yet you taught me things because you were so mean to me.
Right.
I probably never do that.
Oh, well,
then, but
okay.
Actually, I'm pretty sure
I see
I
where, okay.
That.
What you're saying is there's some people in our lives that are not good people, or, well, in this case, Pitino is not necessarily not a good people, but what he was doing in that moment didn't feel good. But I think there's a difference. Rick Pitino in those moments was not trying to kill you.
No,
that doesn't matter what you felt like.
Exactly.
Rick Pitino was trying to make you the best that you could be. Now you see that. This is what I mean by surrounding ourselves with people. It doesn't mean that they have to be, let's go pick flowers and sing Kumbaya. That's not the point. I'm talking about iron sharpens iron. I want people in my life that disagree with me. I want people in my life that you mentioned it earlier, tell me hard things. That's not negative Nelly. There's a difference. I'm talking about don't let people who are professional victims in your circle. Put people in your circle who are professional winners. And those people can have any kind of attitude they might have, but seek them out for the talent they have in finding the positive, sharpening, you know, the iron, sharpening the sword, creating the diamond, so to speak. Rick Pitino was a master at creating diamonds out of lumps of coal. You were a lump of coal, and he turned you into a diamond.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you wouldn't have dominated. Let's say
a very shiny cubic zirconia.
Okay,
all
right. But maybe you wouldn't have dominated in the NAIA. Maybe in the NAIA you would have just been a mediocre player and didn't really care. Maybe he found that nugget inside you that made you the guy that hit the shot.
Well, I think the point is that I might have languished in the NAIA. I tend to think of it as Georgia, right? Because that was my Georgia was my safety school, right?
Right, right.
I could have gone to Georgia, which wasn't NAI, but I would bet you that if I went to Georgia, and this says nothing about the coaches that were there or that would have been there, one of them would have been Tubby Smith. I would have been coached by Tubby Smith. Either way, if I'd gone to Georgia, he would have been my coach at one point. If I'd gone to Kentucky, he was my coach. But I look at it as if I had gone to Georgia, I'm pretty sure I would never have had anything close to the career I had. And I don't just mean because I was at Kentucky that won two national championships and Georgia didn't. What I mean is I had to have Rick Pitino in my life. I had to have someone who was brutal to me. And I mean that in all the good sense. I had to have someone who I feared. I had to have someone who, I mean, because you just said it, iron sharpens iron. I had to have that scrape in my life,
right,
of constantly wearing me out. And God does the same thing, right? He burns away the chaff. He burns away the impurities in our life. That's basically what was going on with me in basketball and Coach Pitino. He was scraping me down, or some people say, and I think this is an apt phrase, he was tearing me down, right, every day. My freshman, sophomore year, he tore me down. I felt like he hated me. But I finally realized, in talking to players and in realizing how he treated me off the court, he doesn't hate me. He loves me.
Right.
Because, and this goes back to that old thinking of, look, if I didn't care about you, I would never engage with you, right?
Right.
I am hard on you because I love you. It's that thing your parents tell you when you and I were kids. But I don't know if your mom ever did this, but my mom did. She had that moment where she spanked me and told me, I do this because I love you, right?
Right.
I yell at you when you run across the street because I love you and I don't want to see you hurt. Well, that's easy to see when you're a kid sometimes. It's harder to see when you're 22 years old, 20 years old, you're at the University of Kentucky, and you've got this coach who is just cussing you up and down every day. It's hard to see then. But looking back 20 years later, I'm like, man, thank God he treated me like that.
Right.
Thank God he wouldn't let me be average, because your point to me is very valid in that whether it was NAI or Georgia, I probably would have languished. I probably would have been average, because – I'm the type of person who needs to be coached.
Right.
I need to be driven. And therefore, when I am, I want to be the type of person, even in the moment now, hopefully, right, who's learned this lesson, that I turn to that person who has corrected me and thank them.
Yeah.
Not get mad at them, not get my feelings hurt, but thank them. Thank you for – and not do it sarcastically.
Right.
Sincerely, thank you for loving me enough to not let me be average.
There's another side of this sort of – gratefulness Rubik's cube too, because I was thinking while you were kind of discussing this how you felt in the moment, Rick Pitino was trying to turn you into something better than you were when he first met you.
Yep.
And he was successful. There are, mm-hmm, also people in our lives that have done things to us that you mentioned, we learn lessons from, who have been those negative people who have harmed us in some way. And I think gratefulness can be part of the key to forgiveness, because if you can look back on that situation in your life and say, that person hurt me, but it made me stronger here, here, and here.
Yeah.
Or that person,
yeah,
did wrong to me, but it led me to this, this, and this. And you could say, then now I am grateful for that because,
yeah,
of how that manifested in my life. It can kind of help lead to forgiveness, which is also, uh-huh, necessary for happiness and gratefulness. I mean, it's a circle, but I mean, it's
– Do you remember –
yeah.
Do you remember, and I think you and I have talked about this before, but do you remember in, let's say, elementary school, middle school, high school, even on the reservation, which is where you spent most of your childhood, do you remember who your bullies were?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, one of them ran
so
into my dad the other day. One of them ran into my dad the other day.
Yeah.
My dad was out taking the – for those of you that don't know, I grew up on an Indian reservation. My parents are Christian missionaries on the American Indian field, and my dad still serves there today. My mom passed away a few years ago. My dad was taking the trash out at the church. And,
yeah,
this guy walks up to him and offers to take the trash out for him, like to carry it for him, because my dad's in his 70s.
Okay.
So he carries the trash, and he starts asking about me. And,
yeah,
and he tells my dad, he said, yeah, he goes, when I was when we were kids, I used to fight your son. And
what a great decision.
And then he tells my dad to, hey, tell your son I said hi. And dad calls me, and he goes,
yeah,
do you remember a kid named Randy that you used to fight? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it was
– no, wait a minute. Did you fight him, or did he beat you up? Because,
okay,
there's a difference.
There was three guys that were regularly beating the crap out of me.
Okay.
Randy thought he could be one of those group. Randy,
okay,
tried, and I fought him off several times, and then he left me alone.
Oh, okay, so you all literally fought.
We literally fought, I mean, we're talking 9, 10, 11, 12 years old here. We're not talking, like, we're not talking
23.
Anything. Yeah, but the point is, I never, I was never doing anything mean to him. He would always attack me, and then I would have to fight him off. But for whatever reason, I stuck in his head, and he thought to tell my dad while taking the trash out for my dad, hey, I used to try to fight your son.
That's funny.
So
he didn't – because I'll be honest, I do this. You know this. I jump ahead in stories and imagine where I think they're going to go. I thought there was going to be, like, either he mentioned you, brought you up, and apologized. Hey,
nope.
Tell Leland, I'm
didn't
sorry.
Didn't say
he
was
just
sorry.
Remembered that we – and I love to say – but I do love the fact – and granted, you were kids, and I'm sure he probably – maybe he does feel some guilt. But I love the way he qualified the statement of you and your son and I used to fight.
Right.
And yes, there's some truth in that. But from your point of view, no, I used to bully your son would have been a more correct way of saying what you feel. But it's interesting because that's why I asked that question. And it's actually similar to your story. So I honestly had one bully growing up, and I'm not going to go into too much detail because there's chances he could hear this, and I don't want him knowing necessarily. But I had a bully in elementary school, middle school, and Leland, I hated this guy. And as most of us hate our bullies, right?
Oh yeah.
I couldn't stand him. He constantly was mocking me in front of people, making fun of me in front of people. And I don't know what his reasons for it were, but what's interesting is, and he's the person I was thinking of earlier when I thought I would never go back to him and thank him for bullying me. Right.
Right.
However, there is something to be said as I look back on life in that I learned something from him. I learned how to, you know, in the sense of I learned what the correct in my world, what the correct responses could be to being bullied. Right?
Right.
And what I was taught, and the fighting was never an option unless it was defending yourself. Sounds like you. But it was, Cameron, you can laugh with your bullies if they're teasing you, right? You can laugh along with them, or you can turn and walk away.
Right.
And those were now. And those, in some sense, have stuck with me, right?
Right. Right.
And even learning, I remember a guy named John Gillum, who is a judge in Somerset now. John wasn't my bully. John was a good friend. But I remember watching John do something brilliant one time. And this is not only saying, you know, apropos of what we're talking about, but it just stuck in my head. John was being made fun of on the school bus because he and his quote unquote girlfriend. Now we're in first and second grade here. So let's be accurate about what kind of girlfriends we're talking about here. And the school bus started this chant of John loves Aubrey. John loves Aubrey. The same thing had happened to me weeks before, which was Cameron loves Amber. It turns out Aubrey and Amber were sisters. Cameron loves Amber. And I shrunk. I was embarrassed. I was horrified. I went home and I was crying. 2 weeks later, John gets this John loves Aubrey, and I watched something incredible happen. And it taught me this lesson. John stood up at the front of the bus and started directing the chant like a musical band, like basically owning every minute of it. And I think about that, and like that taught me a huge lesson.
Right.
Of if I will laugh along with my persecutors, right?
Yes.
If I will laugh along with them, if I don't give them the power, then I win. Or better yet, there's a draw.
Right.
And so I think about that even right now with this conversation of gratitude. Like, man, that there's a lesson I hadn't thought about in years that a first grader taught me when I was in first grade. One of my friends taught me, and he has no idea the impact. And because I hadn't thought about it in a while, and right now I'm thinking, you know what? The next time I see John, I need to remind him of, hey, let me tell you something you did in first grade that had a positive impact on my life.
That's really awesome. I love that story because, you know, you were asking about bullies. The vast majority of bullying that I got, and I got quite a bit of it, most of it I brought on myself.
Well, that's an honest.
No, I was a know-it-all, and so I would stick my nose in places it didn't belong. I would make statements as fact that were opinion. I would join conversations I wasn't a part of, and then I would get mad because people were mean to me. And I remember one time my mom said, "Maybe you're the problem." You know what I mean?
Wow,
and
what a great mom.
I know, and it was like, "Hun, if this keeps happening over and over again, and it's different people."
Yeah.
And you're the factor that is the same in everyone. Perhaps it's how you're packaging your truth. You know what I mean?
Leland, let me ask you a question. Do you think how many moms do you think today would be that harsh and honest and loving to their kids?
Not many.
Maybe they would.
I don't know. I hope more than we hope.
I hate it that you and I get into these, you know, because I think everyone, as they get older, they wind up trashing the next generation.
Yeah.
The millennials have been trashed a great deal.
Right.
But I think
sometimes unfairly.
Yeah, I agree, and sometimes unfairly. But I think there's a lesson there of, you know what, and that goes back to what we're talking about with Coach Pitino, is your mom loved you enough not to be, yes, you are her precious little boy, but because you're her precious little boy, she's going to make sure you see the truth,
right?
Not stroke your ego.
She loved me enough to not let me be a victim.
And that's probably the best way of putting it, is I'm not going to allow you. But not only that, she made sure you understood that you might be the bully.
Right.
right?
Either that, or at least bringing upon me that maltreatment, or more importantly, people less apt to stand up and defend me when bullies are doing a legitimate bullying act because nobody likes me, and they're like, fine, let him get his butt kicked. You know? So, but the point is, I look back the same way you look at that situation and go, that guy taught me something. For me, those days of bullying were, you know, they taught me how to be they taught me more. I guess my mom used to use the word couth, but how to present my personality in a way that's less abrasive. Because you and I are both in one way that we're similar. We have strong personalities. And when we're in a room, people tend to know we're both in a room. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's like you have to temper that so that you don't sort of dominate every discussion that's around you and drive people away.
Yeah. But see, the point is, bringing us back to the discussion today, there is that moment of, okay, here's a lesson I learned. In your case, that your mom, and I love that story, that your mom, because I don't think my mom in my situation ever said to me, hey, you ever think that maybe you're the problem? But I can't think of a more loving thing for a mom or a dad to do.
Right.
Because you're right. And that, the more I think about it, you're right. It's, they wouldn't allow you to play the victim. They wouldn't allow you to be the victim. So, Leland, what part are you playing in this? If it keeps happening, buddy, what part are you playing in that? And so bringing us back full circle is, but that's something else to be grateful for.
Yes.
And I think the larger point today, at least what I'm thinking in my life, is, it's wonderful to be grateful. It's wonderful to be thankful. Are you telling those people how much you appreciate them?
Right.
It's look, it's one thing to say, I love you. It's something else to show I love you.
Yeah.
And that's, to me, what kind of happened to me a couple of weeks ago. And it's kind of set me on this path because I think you even said, I sent you that text. I shared it with you. I shared it. Let me tell you what I sent Coach Pitino. And by the way, Coach Pitino sent me a very kind response back.
Yeah, he did.
And I think I shared it with you. And it got, your next response to me was, you got me thinking, I need to say thank you to somebody today.
Right. Yeah. I think if we don't, I love where this conversation's going, because you did something that I think is difficult for men in general to do.
A lot
of the people using the thankfulness or the gratefulness buzzword are women, and they are setting a great example for us. Because they're recognizing these things that oftentimes men want to say, well, I did this myself. It's hard to sit back and go, you know what, man? That guy right there helped make me who I am. That's a hard thing for a man to do, and I respect guys that are doing it. I respect that you did it.
But don't you think it's hard in some sense? Because, look, that is a very – that's an emotional thing to say to somebody, right?
Yeah.
That is a very – and I think that's part of it too. I think you're right. I think part of it is our arrogance as men. I think another part of it, because we want to take the credit for the things that we feel we've accomplished, and we don't want to thank the people along the way who have helped us. I think that is part of his arrogance. I think the other part of it is, though, that is a very personal, meaningful, emotional conversation, and men don't like to have those either.
Right.
We don't like to share our feelings. Now, you can be like you and I are close enough. You and I have had several in the last few years, deep emotional talks about things going on in our various lives, right?
Right.
But when you talk about someone that you haven't talked to in 2 years, maybe that you were never truly close to, but, you know, and because then that to me was Coach, you know, he and I were not closest friends. He and I did not have deep emotional conversations about things going on in our life. He just taught me. He was a taskmaster in my life that I needed to reach out to and send. And I'll be honest, it was a little bit intimidating to send that text.
Right.
But I imagine the times, because I think the better step, and this wouldn't have been afforded to me, but because he's in Greece and I'm here, but the better step would be in front of him. Right. And it's hard to do that because it gets so, I don't know what the word is. I can just think of emotions for men.
Right.
We don't like having those emotional talks. That's why we use humor as a defense mechanism, right? We use sarcasm. Men tend to needle each other and mock each other because we don't like having those, put an arm around someone, say, hey man, I love you.
Yeah.
You know, and being sincere in that. I think that's just hard for men in general.
I agree. But we got to take those steps because, you know, what you did, I think it encouraged me. And hopefully this conversation that we're having encourages others, especially men, but others across the board, to find someone in your life. And you know, there's something else, too, that you said. It might be beneficial to find someone in your life that you're less comfortable saying this to and yeah. say it to them. Because, like, yeah. you know, I can go to my wife right now and say, you know what, honey, I'm really grateful to you. You know what I mean? I mean, we have a comfortable relationship. I can pick up the phone and call you and say, dude, I'm grateful for our friendship. You know that. And
you've
and
actually done that before.
I have.
You sent me a very, you called me or texted me a few years ago and sent me a very sweet text from basically from you and Tabitha, just saying, Tabitha and I are so thankful you're a part of our life.
Yeah. And that,
and I remember that, that made that, that, I love that.
And I think it's good to do that. But I also think there might be people in our life that are maybe one or two removed that we're not with all the time or around all the time or have those deep connections with. I mean, you and I have kind of a spiritual connection, friendship that goes a little bit deeper. It doesn't matter whether we're in the same room or we're across the country from each other. It picks up where it left off. And there's only a few people I can say that about. But there's other people that have been very beneficial to me that, you know, I think it might be good to just pick up the phone and say, or you just send a text or a quick email that says, hey, thanks for everything you've done in my life. And maybe even tell them specifically, this is how what you did manifested in my life. So they understand what you're actually doing.
I think that is as important as making the initial text or call anyway.
Right.
You can say thank you for being in my life. But what is going to encourage someone is be specific. Right. Yeah. That's how I was telling the story about John Gillum earlier. I could, if I run into John, because I don't have a way of getting a hold of him right now. But if I were to run into John, and I could tell him that, John, you and I, because we went to first through sixth grade together, seventh grade. You know, he's not been a part of my life in a long time. But if I were to go to him and say, thank you for being in my life, it's not as sincere as saying, let me tell you why I'm thankful you're in my life. Let me tell you something you taught me in first grade.
Right.
Because they would get more joy out of that. And that's part of why we should be, you know, show gratitude, is because it's not just for us so that I can be a successful person. It's that because I feel a certain amount of success. And so I want people to know who I feel I owe and who I feel made a difference in my life.
Right.
And the bottom line is, just to bring this completely full circle, even, is what men need to do is put on their testicle pants and just tell someone that they're thankful.
Right. You have brought it full circle. Put your testicle pants on. All right, man. We've talked for almost an hour here. I love it. Is there any kind of final word you want to say about gratitude, its definition, how it ought to work in our life and all that?
The only thing, I think we've said enough. The only thing I would just remind people of, and I think when I say remind people of, reminding myself as well, that it's one thing to feel it, and it's good to feel it.
Yeah.
It's good to think it, but it's more important to say it, to grab that person and to share with them, as you said perfectly, not just that you're thankful, but why specifically you're thankful for them and what they've done and how you've helped and how they've helped you.
Right. Well, I do want to agree. I don't want to minimize my friends that look to the universe, because I do happen to agree that if we think positively, positive things come to us. And that's whether you're Christian or not. But I believe it's amplified as a Christian, but that's my faith speaking. But I don't want to completely discount the idea that positive thinking and positive vibes bring you, they surround you with positive people. People want to be with somebody that's like that. Thus, opportunities abound. But back to the point, it's like gratitude to me. If we've decided gratitude is a key to success in life, and I believe it is, it's a key to success in life. It's a key to success in faith. It's a key to success in relationships. If we believe that, then expressing that gratitude specifically is watering that plant. And so I totally agree. You have to express it. I love what you said earlier in the conversation. Speaking it, if you're thankful to God, if you feel like God just transpired something in your life, say out loud in your car like a crazy person, thank you, God. I think that leads to sort of a snowball effect, and I think you're absolutely right.
Before
we completely wrap this conversation up, can we just hit the coronavirus for just a minute? And and all of the ridiculous overblowing
overinflation and blowing of what?
Yeah.
Look, I'm not a doctor, neither are you, but I have talked to a few recently, and the thing came up. Look, it's not that this issue it should be ignored. Of course it shouldn't, right? People are dying from it. However, there have been more people die in our country this year of the regular flu, of the flu that everyone gets the flu shot for. More people died in America from that flu than this flu. And I don't know that there have been any studies or there's any evidence that this flu is any more deadly than any other flu, because remember, flu comes in different strains, right? So
right.
I don't know, but yet, but here we go back, and this would be another 4 hours of you and I talking. Maybe we'll have to do it off the air about the media. The media cannot exist unless there's bad news.
Yep.
They want us angry. They want us panicked. They can't come on and say, guys, there's nothing to worry about,
yeah.
right? Because then they don't get paid, bottom line. So they have to come out and make this whole thing in this 24-hour news cycle a bigger deal than it is. Could it explode? I guess it could. Should we be careful? Of course we should. But it's not like this disease that's any more deadly than the flu we already currently have in this country that we have every year that has already killed more people than have died as a result of this.
Well, I've noticed the media reports every single coronavirus death. We've had two in America. We've had 135 children die already from flu this year, and there was not an individual report for every single one of those.
Interesting that, isn't it?
Yeah, and I there's two reasons. You're 100% right. There's two reasons the media is doing this. One, they're chasing a profit motive, and two, they're chasing a political agenda. But that being aside, I have talked to several doctors, and all of them have said the thing that everybody is forgetting, the thing that the media is leaving out about this particular virus is, one, it's been around since the 60s, not this particular strain of it, but the coronavirus itself has been around since the 60s.
Okay.
This is a different strain, and that's what causes some concern. But the doctors that I've talked to have all said the same thing. They've said, look, what you're not getting is the grand total of people who actually end up with it. What you're getting
and
are
survive.
The people, right. Well, because most people don't report that they have a problem until they're so
right.
sick that they need some kind of treatment. So when you hear
yeah.
cases like, when you hear numbers that are really scary, like 80,000 people contracted the disease and 2,000 of them died, you're like, whoa, that's like a 2%+ death rate. No. Maybe 1 million people or 2
right.
million people have actually contracted it, had a couple
yeah.
sniffles, couple coughs, little fever, went away, and never
yeah.
mention it to their doctor. So the death rate
yeah.
is probably more like 0.00000000001%
yeah.
than it is 2%. And so we're not taking that into account, and the media is leaving that out of their reports because they want everybody to freak out and go buy stuff off the shelves, drop the market,
that's right.
and create a political environment where it's easier for
yeah.
a new president to emerge. So.
Look, it's like anything else. And again, I always feel the need to say this, even though I know you're used to this. Is you and I are not doctors. We're not experts in this. But if you just look at what's going on, every year there's this push to get flu shots. Why? Because the flu is not deadly to most people.
Right.
It is deadly to those with compromised immune systems and young people, right? I mean, babies, infants, right? It can be. So there's this push in some sense of, I think, wisdom to, okay, but I mean, that doesn't mean there aren't people every year. Yeah, you get the flu. And like you said, you get the cough, you get sniffles, and you survive it and you just go on. Why is this one any different?
Right. It's
because the flu is different every year. There are different
because it's an election year.
Well, and that brings us into your milieu,
right? My
milieu, where you have expertise, because I didn't even consider that. I considered the market. I considered the media's need to scare people. I
right.
hadn't considered even the election part.
Yeah.
But you're right. Yeah,
100%.
Definitely election year.
Yeah, and
yeah.
you and if you look at it, it's all about criticizing the current president's.
Well,
reaction
of course
to
it's his fault.
Yeah, of course. Everything is. So listen, let's wrap this up. It's been great putting this out there. Let's hope that people can find ways to be grateful to each other and express that gratitude and express it specifically. Those who listen to the very beginning of this conversation all the way to the end will love what I'm about to say. From your executive producers, Cameron Mills and Leland Conway, thanks to Dynamics Production for their production support of this awesome podcast. You can follow us on Twitter. It's Cameron Mills. Give me your Twitter again. It's with a Z. I don't want to get
yeah,
it.
Yeah, at Cameron Mills with a Z on the end instead of an S.
And mine is at Leland Show, and of course, at Zone Disruption, because some jack wagon took the disruption zone. And we're on Instagram as well, at The Disruption Zone, at Greatly Londo.
I love the phrase jack wagon. It's my favorite phrase.
It's a great word. And your Instagram is what, so people can follow you on there?
Instagram is Cameron Mills Radio, at Cameron Mills Radio.
All right, remember, you can download this podcast from Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and wherever podcasts are found, or directly from our website, thedisruptionzone.com. I'm Leland Conway. He's Cameron Mills. Thanks for listening.